The views expressed on the following program are the views of the show's host and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station, their management, their donors, their underwriters, nor their seventh-born sons. If you want to know what's really going on, as opposed to what the Wall Street media machine wants you to think is going on, then you're in the right place. You are listening to the Thunderbolt on KAOS 89.3 FM, Olympia, Washington. This is the voice of the revolution. Listen at your own risk. Hey, people, I hope you're ready, because here we go again. It's October 2nd, 2020, meaning that once again, it is time to start thunderbolting evildoers with 1,200 watts of transmission power.
Now it is time for a preview of the world of tomorrow. We step into the future and find fantastic atomic-powered machines working for us. The world is unified and peaceful. Outer space is the new frontier. We walk for a time among the strange mechanical wonders of tomorrow and then blast off on a rocket to the moon.
So, I am always overjoyed when I can spread some good news for a change. And I am happy to announce that if you can find a golden ticket, you can win yourself a candy factory. Yes, I know, you've heard all that before, but this time it's for real. A gentleman named David Klein, who founded the Jelly Belly Confectionery Company, has hidden gold tickets in the form of a necklace with a verifiable tag and code. And they will be hiding these necklaces throughout the country. And anyone who finds one of these necklaces will receive a prize of $5,000. But the grand prize is your very own candy factory. According to Mr. Klein, quote, "We are going to have the ultimate treasure hunt where the winner will be receiving a key to one of our candy factories." And to make the Wonka comparison even more apt, Mr. Klein also said the contest is a celebration of his own retirement. Oh boy, I can't wait. Meanwhile, in other news, I have been reporting for literally decades now upon all of the big banks' involvement in laundering literally trillions of dollars a year for large criminal organizations. Yes, people, arms dealers, drug traffickers, human smugglers, corrupt dictators. All of these folks find a hearty welcome in the offices of HSBC, Bank of America, Chase Bank, et al. This has been going on for decades, and other than occasionally outraging everyone every 10 years or so when the news of it leaks out to the public, even then, nothing is ever actually done about it, and eventually public outrage drifts on to other subjects and everything just continues unabated. Well, once again, reporters have uncovered the fact that big banks are massively laundering money for large criminal organizations, and once again, those reporters are reporting on it. Let's see if anyone does anything about it this time. So there are a lot of things that can be said about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And a lot of people are saying a lot of those things. But I have yet to hear anyone mention my own personal favorite anecdote about the notorious RBG. Concerning her nickname, which was so obviously derived from the gangster rapper,
I'm radioactive,
known as the Notorious B.I.G.,
I have an isotope arm.
A reporter once asked RBG
Cobalt
what she thought of being compared,
I live on a farm,
to a gangster. RBG immediately replied, why, I think that we have a lot in common. And meanwhile, when it comes to replacing Ms. Ginsburg, the hypocrisy being displayed by Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is truly profound. In 2016, Senator McConnell insisted that the voters should decide about the next Supreme Court justice when Barack Obama still had 10 months left on his term. Yet this time, Senator McConnell insists that the rump should decide about the Supreme Court when there are only 45 days before the election. Well, that's just par for the course. My only surprise would be if anyone else were surprised.
I live on a farm.
As far as replacing the notorious RBG, it's a sure bet that the rump is going to choose some right-wing reactionary. And there is probably nothing that the Democrats can do about it, even if they were so inclined, which usually they're not. There are some things that the Democrats could do to make Mr. McConnell's decision really difficult for the Republicans. And there are a lot of things the Democrats could do to seriously slow this process down. But for the rump's entire term, the Senate Minority Leader, Chuck Schumer, has been allowing the rump to pack the courts with Nazis and has been providing no pushback, either from Mr. Schumer or from the other Democrats.
We have no fleas or silly bubbly type beers.
Fully a third of the entire federal judiciary has now been appointed by Donald Trump, and that is going to be haunting us for the next generation, if we last that long.
But we have no fleas or silly bubbly type beers.
Yes, the Democrats have totally been playing ball with Republicans on all of these judiciary appointments. They have been doing nothing to stop it. So I don't see why they would start now. Yes, they'll make a lot of noise for the sake of appearance, but I predict that the Democrats won't actually do anything about this Supreme Court appointment. And now we're going to get another Nazi on the high court. Yeah, I never expect very much from the Democrats. And my lack of expectation is usually fully realized. This means that we're going to have a 6-3 Nazi majority on the Supreme Court for the foreseeable future. That is going to be really bad. It will be hard to get their nomination through before the election. But a scenario that would really suck is if the rump loses the election, but still goes ahead and shoves a new justice through the Senate during the lame duck period between the election and the point where he actually leaves office. The situation is also due to the insane power imbalance between the small states and the large states in this country. As a result of constitutional compromises made to slaveholders during the American Revolution, states with small populations have a much larger share of power per capita than states with large populations do. So we end up with a minority majority. Also, there is this fact to consider. The Democrats have won the popular vote in 6 out of the last 7 presidential elections. And the contention that George W. won the popular vote in 2004 is actually highly questionable, yet the Republicans have already appointed 14 out of the last 18 Supreme Court justices and are now seeking to appoint 15 out of the last 19. And whatever you do want to call it, you cannot call a system of rule by a small minority a democracy. And I've got some snake oil for sale while we're at it. But first, I have news for those of you who think that the world is going to the birds. The evidence is mounting that actually the world may not be going to the birds, but rather to the drones. It turns out, in fact, that all of these drones that are flying around these days are totally freaking out several species of birds. And it is thought that those birds may begin moving their traditional homes in response. As for myself, I would think that being spooked by drones would be better than being droned by spooks. But what do I know? Anyway, a few years ago, I wrote an article in my newsletter that was highly critical of a local woman of color. Even though my critique was completely legitimate, and even though my reporting was factual, a flash mob launched a vicious attack upon every aspect of my personal life under the theory that any white man who criticizes any woman of color is automatically a racist, no matter what the actual facts are. Since they succeeded at pretty much destroying my personal life, I hesitate and I think about it more these days before I criticize a woman of color. That kind of pisses me off, though, because other than trying to kill the message by killing the messenger, that was probably one of the central goals of my attackers to begin with. But anyway, with the choice of Kamala Harris as Joe Biden's running mate, there's a very good chance that a black Asian daughter of immigrants is going to become the next vice president. And since Joe Biden is in his late 70s, and since Joe Biden has never been the sharpest rock in the pile anyway, and since on top of that, Joe Biden is obviously going senile, then there is a very good chance that Kamala Harris will end up becoming president. And that is a truly historic event that represents a great cultural leap forward. And I truly do hate to rain on that parade, but of course, I'm going to anyway. The central problem with Kamala Harris is that the only way that people of color can attain any positions of true power within the American machine are for them to become much better at being white people than most white people are. Barack Obama was the archetype of this, and Kamala Harris appears to be no exception to that rule. Like Obama, Ms. Harris is charismatic, intellectually brilliant, intelligent, and she has the kind of racially diverse background that encapsulates the future of America. However, while she publicly claims to be progressive, her actual actions as the San Francisco DA and as California's Attorney General were the complete opposite. So Kamala Harris got her political start in the early 90s by jumping into bed, literally, with Willie Brown, who was at that time the Speaker of the California State Assembly and a powerhouse in San Francisco politics. Now, Mr. Brown appointed Kamala Harris to two state boards, and after that, she was off. Mr. Brown was also the one who introduced Kamala Harris to other key members of the Bay Area Democratic political machine, such as Dianne Feinstein and Nancy Pelosi. Willie Brown also introduced Kamala Harris to some of the machine's wealthy backers, all of whom could help Ms. Harris with fundraising, endorsements, and help with staffing electoral campaigns. And then, according to Lawrence H. Shoup, writing in Counterpunch, quote, "Once in office, Harris became known for her lavish personal lifestyle, using campaign and other funds for first-class air travel and upscale hotels, which routinely cost $800 to $1,800 a night." One former aide commented, "Kamala demands a life of luxury." During her prosecutorial career, Kamala Harris pursued the war on drugs with enthusiastic vigor. As the San Francisco DA, she fought any and all efforts at police reform, and she never prosecuted a single killer cop during her entire tenure as California's Attorney General. She oversaw over 1,900 cannabis-related convictions. She fought tooth and nail against freeing wrongfully convicted people. And she fought tooth and nail against compensating those people who had been wrongfully convicted, many of whom had spent many years in a California prison as a result. She fought tooth and nail to uphold these wrongful convictions, even though prosecutors had obtained them with evidence tampering, false testimony, and the suppression of crucial information. And at the same time, she was famous for ignoring some famous corporate crime and criminals, such as, for instance, Donald Trump's current Secretary of the Treasury, Steven Mnuchin, for instance. Again, writing in Counterpunch, Lawrence H. Shoup writes, "Investigations of home foreclosures by prosecutors in Harris's own office of the California State Attorney General in 2013 found that one West had illegally backdated massive numbers of key documents, violated notice and waiting periods, as well as gained foreclosure auctions to deprive tens of thousands of California homeowners of their property. And all of this greatly benefited Steven Mnuchin and One West. And the violations were in the thousands. Summed up as widespread misconduct by leaders of Kamala Harris's own consumer law section, they recommended a civil enforcement action against the bank. They even wrote up a sample legal complaint. But despite their urgings, Kamala Harris refused to prosecute the case. Mnuchin and billionaire George Soros, an investor in One West, both evidently appreciated what Harris did, because each of them made a generous campaign contribution to Harris's 2016 Senate campaign. And in sharp contrast to the kid glove treatment of corporations and the rich, Kamala Harris put the hammer down when it came to rank and file people accused of crimes. Kamala Harris has supported mandatory minimums and the death penalty. Kamala Harris has relentlessly pursued many cases, even when there was clearly false testimony and evidence tampering used to convict. Yes, the story is a long one, studied and recounted in depth by the San Francisco School of Law professor, Laura Bazelon, B-A-Z-E-L-O-N, and published on January 17, 2019, in the New York Times. In addition to her highly questionable record as a prosecutor, Kamala Harris is also a strong supporter of the Israeli apartheid state. In addition to all that, Kamala Harris's sister and campaign chair, Maya Harris, is an intimate of Hillary Clinton. Maya Harris is also a prominent commentator with MSDNC. She is an official with the Ford Foundation, and she is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Concerning the Council on Foreign Relations, again, Lawrence H. Shoup provides a great description. Quote, "The Council is the world's most powerful private organization. It is the ultimate networking, socializing, strategic planning, and consensus-forming institution of the dominant U.S. bureaucratic billionaire class. It is the think tank of monopoly finance capital. Its connections extend deeply into key American corporations, leading media, top universities, powerful nonprofit foundations, other think tanks, and international organizations, as well as meetings with groups such as the Bilderberg Group, the Trilateral Commission, and Davos. In addition to her CFR Hillary Clinton George Soros-connected sister, Kamala Harris's other staff members during her campaign, basically represented a combination of people connected to the Bay Area Democratic Party political machine, former Barack Obama operatives, and former Hillary Clinton staff members. But most tellingly is the fact that if Bernie Sanders was the king of small donations, Kamala Harris was the queen of large mega contributions. Kamala Harris received more big money than any other Democrat other than Joe Biden himself. These contributors represented a who's who of corporate infamy, including Time Warner, Alphabet, Google, Wells Fargo, Apple, Microsoft, and Rupert Murdoch's News Corp. Yes, people, Kamala Harris is an establishment candidate. She is a Clinton drone backed by the corporate ruling class and by its closest allies. No, people, Kamala Harris definitely does not represent change that we can believe in. And so now, it's time to take a quick station break. We'll be back in just a minute.